My name is Terry Portis. I have recently retired, and some people say that I'm failing at that since I'm here at the testing conference and that I have a part-time job still. I love what I do in education. It was time, due to some medical issues with my mom, that I needed to balance some life situations. And so this has been a perfect balance for me. One, I can be a good daughter, and hopefully my kids see that as well when my time comes. But second of all, I can still work a little bit, so I can be a better daughter when I am with my mom. And so I am an active member of the Michigan Assessment Consortium. How many of you are fully aware of what MAC does? A little bit? Okay. First of all, I like to say, because I am like this when it comes to vendors, I just have an issue myself personally, because they can sell you anything, and that is a struggle for me. I have to do my own research, and then I will go find a vendor when I need them. I don't want them coming to me. The reason why I say that is the MAC is a 503 nonprofit. We do this to help Michigan educators. Very few things cost money with the MAC, and if it does cost something, it's usually because it's part of MVU, and you would take the module for sketches, and you're paying for that. Or it's a summer institute that we offer, where that's an additional thing that we do. But most of the things that we have available on the website is free for all of you. So what you're gonna get today will be things that you can use back in your district, and you can have access to those to be able to use. Did a session this morning that was very much focused on how do you build assessment literacy within a district, and I feel extremely confident because that's what I've done for the last 15 years. This right here, I think Jim Gullen should be doing this. Anyone know Jim Gullen? He's also on the MAC, but he's a statistician who talks normal language, and he deeply understands and can explain things. You know, we were in one of his sessions, and it's like, let's talk about normative data. So he lined us all up from the shortest to the tallest. All right, here's your norm. Here's your spread from this height to this height. He's really good at that, where some are like, here's the technical language. So today's session is going to be informational. It's not going to be the statistician piece, and if you're looking for that, I can get you with the right people who can talk to you deeper about this. I was asked to do this session because I am part of the assessment consortium, but we do a MAC Reads every year. Anyone familiar with a MAC Reads event? What it is that we select a book and an author. We talk to that author and say, hey, can we read this book? We're gonna have some things that happen at the state level, and we can share information. And then we'd like you to come and then talk to the people who are part of our sessions to gather their questions to answer them specifically, as well as to be able to, we'll video record it so that we can use that in other presentations. And so they make these things available. Nice thing with that is it builds up the things that are on the MAC resource pages that you can then use in your districts. So we did last year MAC Reads with this book. Next year, our next, let me think about this. In the fall, we do them at different times of the year, just depending on the author. In the fall, this spring, we'll have a kickoff session for our next one, which will be Grading for Learning with Ken O'Connor. And then in the fall, we will actually have a webinar with him so we can ask the questions after we kind of go through some things within your own PLC around the book. So this was last year's book, and because I was the chair at that time, I am here presenting. So I'm gonna go ahead and work from a PowerPoint, but I'm also going to reference, does anybody have this book that you got through ASCD? It was sometimes just a member book that they sent out. 2018 maybe? Let me just look to see. Real quick. Yeah, 2018, it was a ASCD. So this might trigger you to go back and take a look if you're a part of that group. to be able to take a look at, if you actually have this book back there. But it's a fairly inexpensive book because it's through ASCD. They have the study guide right on there as well. And one of the pieces with this is that we did some information with Jim that are the whole video, but then he also answered some learning points or learning moments, which are just pointed questions. So instead of watching the video, because really, I know that there's popcorn probably, but that's not what you do at a conference. We wanted to just have little snippets that we could use, and that's the pieces that we'll look at today. And I'll show you where it's at on the website, so if you want to go back and reuse any of this information, you're more than welcome to do that. But we're going to just look at the key assessment literacy practices or concepts that are critical in the testing world. All of you have do you guys have these assessment literacy standards? If not, we do have a booth out there. These are free of charge, or I'll show you where you can download them. But here's one piece that Jim and the MAC differ. Jim says there's 6 critical understandings. And we're saying, well, that's great if you're a test developer and you have key understandings you need to know. But educators who are not in that realm, we need to have different and more finite kind of opportunities to learn along the way, because we are not test developers usually. We're not statisticians. So this could be a way that we could help, whether you're a student, whether you're an educator, whether you're a policymaker, to get some key understandings out. And again, these are free of at the table as well. So we wanted to make sure that we were able to support you in additional resources that you may need. But some of the key understanding is that being assessment literate is an essential in this era where important decisions are being made about students, educators, and educational systems based on data collected around student data. And again, many of these decisions are being made inaccurately based on the purpose of that data assessment. So what's happening here, which infuriates me, is that we are graduating people from university who are missing these skills. People's jobs, oops, you didn't get any either. People's jobs are, did you get them? Or I'll get it. Okay. People's jobs are on the line because of this. And we just don't want to have decisions being made using the assessment for the wrong reason. And we just need to figure out how are we going to do this differently so that everybody has understands the importance of this and can stand up and say, no way, we are not using that for this purpose. But because there are so many people who don't understand these concepts, things are happening to us, and part of the MAC's mission is to be able to educate those around us on the important assessment literacy concepts that are important to you if you're a statistician, if you're a classroom teacher, and anywhere in between. So our goal of developing those standards were to help students and their families, teachers, administrators, and policymakers understand the foundations in which the field works with assessment. Assessment literacy means, and the role that purpose has, you know, we need to have that comprehensive, balanced, and quality assessment system. Back to Pellegrino, many things you've already heard here. If we don't have a full system, then we're also not getting the right information. And sometimes we think we overtest and we overtest and we do. But sometimes we're overtesting using the wrong things that we are duplicating. And if we did a comprehensive analysis of our assessment system, we could get rid of some of those things. So what is it that we can do to help the field become smarter about things that we're not gaining in our educational coursework? So these are the important terms inside of here. Anybody want to just take the test and leave right now on these terms? These are words that we may know, we see. But Jim is talking about it in this book, very much from test development and the use of assessments to make sure that we understand these terms. Each of the chapters in this book references each one of these items up here. And these are his fundamental understandings that he's referencing. And so inside here, as a part of this presentation, what I've done is if you have this book, that's why I ask if you had it, if you think you might have this book, you may want to write down some page numbers because I've referenced things inside of the book specifically that can also help with this. So as we start here, like I said, Dr. Popham's statement is that assessment literacy focuses on a small number of assessment-related understandings, which are those on the previous slide, that will reduce the number of and the magnitude of measurement-based mistakes in the world of education. So he's saying if we have an understanding of these essential components here, six, because assessment literacy is in there, that we can stop having some of the mistakes that are being made today. And again, the MAC, we believe that it's about beliefs, knowledge, and understandings, practices that teachers, administrators, policymakers, or students use, not necessarily the person who's developing that test. But what can we gain from that to be able to utilize these and make sense of the information in front of us? Again, the assessment literacy, this is on the downloads. You can get this. All of the links are on there. I did find that I was struggling, and I don't know if it's the internet that I was trying to struggle with, or I will show you at the end where you can get these direct links in case the link tells you you don't have access, because I do have access, and it was telling me I didn't have access, but I was out in the... So...
I think it's the internet here.
It struggles. So, you know, we're going to be looking at some learning point pieces and I'll give you some information on learning opportunities if you're interested. Our past event was this book last year, and Ken O'Connor's Grading for Learning is the upcoming year. So, validity. I'm going to try the link, and I'm going to almost guarantee it's not going to work. So, I hate to stand up front because that drives me crazy, but I may have to because these are short videos. So, yep. Okay. So we're going to go between two sessions here. All right. We're going to start with what is assessment literacy? The nice thing are these are 1 minute to 2 minute little video snips that are short that you can use in staff meetings.
Assessment literacy is a commodity that I think is a really overlooked one in our society. And people can differ on what is involved in the nature of assessment literacy. I believe assessment literacy is one of the most effective ways we can improve the quality of schooling. And a number of colleagues agree with me on that point. But the question is, what is assessment literacy? And that's where we have some differences. My belief is that it is better to have a very small number of terribly significant understandings on the part of teachers or administrators or the citizenry in general. Much better to have a small number of those and really master them well than to have a whole array and not really use them in a day-in, day-out kind of operation. But assessment literacy fundamentally refers to the understanding that a person has about the fundamental procedures and concepts in educational assessment that in fact are apt to influence educational decisions. Not just knowing stuff because it's a good thing to know, but the kinds of things that influence the decisions made about children. And there cannot be anything more important than that.
Kind of goes back to that slide of his key components versus are we using this for our entire system? So in the first chapter of his book, it really is about validity. I'm just going to go back here just for a second. So validity represents the degree to which the evidence-based argument supports the accuracy of the test interpretation
for the proposed use of the test results. So, validity, are you using the results based on what that test purpose was? So if the purpose was to evaluate educators, then that would be a great use of a test. If it is a predictor of how students are going to do, then that's not a great match for how we would want that test to be used. So with here, let's listen to what Jim has to say about the validity piece of this and what we need to understand.
Assessment validity, and not many people, even in education, know this, is the fundamental notion of educational testing. We test students to discover what's in their noggins because we can't see it by looking. And based on their overt responses to test items, we arrive at interpretations or inferences about what's going on up here. And if you have the wrong inference about what a student knows and can do, you quite clearly will make the wrong decision about that student. So if you look at all of the array of stuff regarding educational testing that's important, the most important, the sine qua non, that is the indispensable, or as I actually looked it up the other day, without which not, the sine qua non of real testing is to come up with valid interpretations about children's covert capabilities based on their overt responses to tests. That's why it's the most important of all.
And if you happen to have the book, if you want to jot down a couple of things on page, let me see here real quick. Validity. Let's see what this chapter. So if we are looking at the validity pieces of it, if you look at pages 27, key points that if we're not looking at this in the right way, we're going to make some decisions that can literally hurt our students and or educators. Other piece is on page 28. So 27 and 28 would be key points, as well as on page 30. So those are some key points on there that can help us understand, you know, the primary purposes for this, and are they matching what we're trying to use them for? This first part of the presentation is going to be about this, and then we're going to do some interactive reading to say, how might I take some of this information back with me to use in my district? All right? All right, our next section, it's hard to go between these here, sorry. We're going to go to reliability, and I'm not going to keep opening this all the way up. But assessment reliability is the consistency in which a test measures what it says it measures. So if a test is not valid, then anything that we do with it is going to be not of use. If it's not reliable, it also is not going to be valid. If it doesn't produce the same results time after time on the test itself, then we're going to have some problems, and then our reliability is not there, which means we can't really use the data properly, and it won't be a valid result. So there's these first three kind of tagged together. So on here, if a test measures what it says it measures, it will produce reliable results time and time again. Now there's different pieces to that and how they test that, and sometimes it's the test retest. Sometimes it's a form reliability, like there's a form A and a form B. Are you getting the same kinds of results? And then also the internal consistent reliability. Again, the reliability should be reported on the whole group and as individual students. Now, some of the assessments, NWEA, will tell you your guessing rate, okay? If they guess too fast, it's not a very reliable outcome of that student's assessment. So we have to know those components and what, and in what circumstances might this affect the outcome and the decisions that we make about the student. All right. Our next one, test fairness. This kind of goes back to the lunch session about when we started looking at large-scale assessments and how were we being fair to all subgroups who were taking these tests. And sometimes the test fairness can be looked at as, you know, it's something that we really have to bring a group together. So, for example, oh, and I never gave you chapter 2. Remind me to go back to chapter 2 for our reliability. Let me just give you that real quick before I go on. I wish I could have bought the book for each one of you, but I couldn't. So let me just tell you a couple of pages on reliability. If you look on page 36, it will talk about reliability. And also on page 40, they talk about these test, retest, form reliability. And then on page 51, it really just talks about the assessment. Reliability is that consistency in which a test measures what it says it's going to measure. So I just wanted to make sure I pointed that out for reliability. Now I will go to test fairness, sorry. But what they were talking about before is they were noticing that there were subgroups where kids were not being successful on the assessment. And so there were some things that they really had to take a look at. One of those items is do you know that the state brings in a bias committee where they look at question by question? They review those items by each item to look for how might this be biased. Might it be according to racial, ethnic, gender, religious matters? Is it about the type of vocabulary that we're using based on areas of our state? And then this is something that is big in the sense of making sure that all students have a fair opportunity. Here's the piece with this, though, as well. Sometimes it's not the test that's not fair. It's the instruction in which the students receive in the district where they attend. And that is also an issue, and part of the reason why, even though the A to F system is wrong, it's going to hurt people, but people are trying to do something to attend to an issue that they feel needs to be addressed, but they're doing it with the wrong measures. They're not doing it, in a sense, they're looking for fairness, but they're not looking for that fairness through the right lens. So we have other ways in which to measure, depending on the fairness, is this really a testing issue, or is this an instructional issue? And how do we then not penalize people, but how do we help fix that? Because every student in the state of Michigan deserves a quality education. So we're going to listen to the fairness piece here real quick.
This is an extremely interesting area because who could be opposed to test fairness? We want everything to be fair. And yet for many years in the field of educational testing, test fairness received only token attention. And it turns out that in many instances, certain subgroups, perhaps because of ethnicity, religion, socioeconomic status, have been disadvantaged. They don't have a fair chance to perform on a test the way that other people do. And so in the documents that guide the field of educational testing, one is called Standards for Educational and Psychological Measurement. That particular document is like a Bible to testers, because in a courtroom, lawsuits regarding educational tests, that particular document is invoked. Now, the most recent issue of the standards came out in 2014. And in 2014, it said quite clearly, in addition to reliability and validity, which are terribly important to educational testing, we have test fairness. And test fairness now has its very own chapter. It is regarded as one of the three most important features of educational testing. Now, that is validity, reliability, and fairness. And now we are discovering ways of collecting evidence that the test is in fact fair to all test takers.
Some of the things inside of his chapter also talks about some of the things that are being done just in the classroom to try to help with that fairness, universal design for learning, you know, the accessibility opportunities, accommodations that are made for testing, but also in the classroom. And are those things matching up? Are we doing what we're doing in the classroom then on the assessment, or are we only doing it on the assessment, which isn't going to help a student because they've never used those? So we have to look at all of those pieces that go together inside of this to ensure that we have the fairness criteria being addressed. So some of the pages on fairness would be page 56. It kind of gives you an overview of what the fairness understanding is, and that we need to look at judgmental as well as empirical. So we can say, you know, this just doesn't seem right. If we're doing it this way, this isn't helping our students. And we have to be able to look into those things, as well as we know that this is a biased item that should be removed. Some of the other key components in this section would be on page 56. And those are the item bias, and then having that committee to review. And also on page 59, it answers the question, I'll just go to it real quick. Page 59, oops, we don't need that one, sorry. And then the other piece is on page 63 that deals with the unfairness inside of education itself. So, I can just talk to you about this. Is it helpful to watch those little videos? You guys, is it helpful? You're what?
I like his explanation.
Okay. All right. Then I'll continue to do that. We have just a few more. And then we're going to do the reading of some of these articles to talk about how can these ways help when you go back. It's hard to do a book study when you haven't read the book, but people had asked, hey, can you do some follow-ups around this? So then I was asked, since you led it, can you read this? I mean, can you lead this? So, all right.
I think it's helpful you're giving us the page numbers.
Okay, good. Right, and if you are an ASTD member, it was probably one of the books you received. All right, so was there anything else on this page? All right, we're going to go into score reports, which is chapter 5 here. Minimize this for a second. All right, score reports need to be easy to read and interpreted based on the intended use of the assessment. I think it's funny when we listen to his description, you should demand it if it isn't. I haven't found anybody who just jumps at a testing company when I demand something. You know, it needs to go above me. But it is important that teachers understand the reports, that administrators understand the reports. And part of my job when I was the Director of Teaching and Learning in Reese Puffer Schools and in previous positions was to make sure that it was a safe place to have those conversations about what we understand and what we don't understand. Because, again, we have not gone through necessarily, unless that's your background, we need to understand what this is asking us to do And how do we know it's for the right purpose? And we need to be able to ask those questions before we make high stakes decisions around our students and put them into groups if we don't understand what the report really means. The score reports need to be easy to read and interpreted based on the intended use of the assessment. I don't know how many times I've said it over this conference or how many times I've heard it, because I always listen for that purpose is critical. And there are so many times that purpose is not even addressed. It's just automatically assumed. And when we make assumptions, we know that gets us into trouble. All right. All right, score reporting. Here's where he talks about you just have to demand it.
The reason we test students is to arrive at inferences about what we cannot see. We can't see their knowledge, we can't see their skills, but if we can collect evidence regarding what's going on inside the unseen parts, if we can collect that evidence, we can make some useful decisions to better educate them. If the reports of major tests are provided in a manner that is incomprehensible to normals, they're not going to be able to use that information to make better decisions. School boards will not be able to make sense out of how well their schools are doing. Principals will not be able to make sense out of how well their staff is performing. And all of these things take place if we don't understand the nature of the score report being used. And yet, many times we find educators acquiescing to the score report, no matter what it is, because they think it was done by technically suave people. But you have to demand that whatever is reported on a major test is readily comprehended. If it isn't, send it back.
Again, he probably could have that conversation with them because he's 90 years old and has been in the testing business. When he told me how old he really was when we've had these conversations, it's quite amazing. He's still quite snippy when it comes to things he believes and doesn't believe, which I appreciate because he's the one who will take people on. And they look at me and on a testing base, I would do my homework ahead of time, but I'm never going to have his level of knowledge, nor do I ever want to have his level of knowledge, to be honest with you. I'm more that I want to work with teachers to help them understand what they have in front of them and how to use it. So on our score reports, page 69, it's going to give you just some key information at the bottom. If a testing does not make a direct contribution to improving the decisions educators make about students, testing is a waste of time. So we have to make sure that we understand the purpose, which is on page 80, and it talks about accordance with the test purpose. If you're an administrator, if you're a teacher leader, have you looked at what the text manual says the purpose of that assessment is for? Again, do we even know to ask that question? We assume because this is what we've been told. So one of the things within here as well on, let's see here, and page 80, those were the two main pieces out of this chapter. I mean, there's a lot of information in there, but those were two of the key areas that you'll want to be able to use to your advantage as you move forward. All right, we have just a couple more. Two more.
So our next one is going to be on formative assessment, which is his chapter 6.
Formative assessment is one of those gems that's sitting in your jewelry case and you don't realize it's worth millions. It is an incredibly powerful, research-ratified way of using classroom testing to get students to learn better. It provides teachers and students with an opportunity to decide whether they need to adjust what they're doing. Kids need to maybe modify how they're trying to learn something. Teachers need to modify how they're going to teach something. But they don't do it on the basis of whim or caprice. They do it because of evidence collected along the way. And what offends me in our country is that we simply do not use this evidence the way we ought to. We don't use formative assessment. Formative assessment, if done well, there's research to support this, can literally double the speed of student learning. Double it. And yet we don't use it all the time. It's incredible. Offends me. We need to do something about this, and maybe people watching this will realize that they need to look hard at formative assessment. It's a winner.
All right, and with this, inside of this chapter here,
we have so much going for us in the state around formative assessment, and Jim has come to work with that project as well. But in this chapter, pages 89 will give you that ongoing instructional process that you should look through. But his quote about being offended with it, he actually wrote some articles that you may miss if you have this book, that in the back he wrote four articles that can be copied and used as informational articles that could be read at different times by different people about, they're just op-ed essays about ways to improve our schools in a cost-effective way, which is the formative assessment piece. You know, formative assessment is the magic bullet waiting to be used. Phony advertisement, instructionally beneficial standardized test. And he's going to talk about formative assessment in there, and then using the wrong tools to appraise educator quality. So he's getting at that, using the test for the wrong purpose. So there's some op-ed at the back of there that you may miss, and I wanted to make sure you did not miss that. It's a great resource to be able to utilize. On page, 91 is Dylan Williams, who I could listen to all day. He says, formative assessment can effectively double the speed of learning. And that came out of his research as well. And page 98 in here, some people, here's his point, that even though he understands formative assessment can be that thing that can make the difference, he thinks that part of the reason why it doesn't happen is that some teachers, with good reason, regard formative assessment as just simply too much work. It's just one more thing I need to do. And if you don't understand or have not seen the benefits of using it, it's easy to see that. But if we can get people to see small chunks or small incremental change because of that, they're more willing to dig into it deeper. So those were key points in there. Did I say page 89? Let me see what's on 89. On page 89, he just talks about formative assessment is a planned process in which assessment elicited evidence of student status is used by teachers to adjust their ongoing instructional procedures or by students to adjust their curriculum learning tactics. So you'll find that he has, you know, Dylan Williams, Margaret Heritage, the FAME Project, they're all going to have very similar definitions of being a planned process to gather that information to help move student learning forward. On the next slide here, though, before I move on, I did link some items here that you may find beneficial. Get back to my. There we go. So I linked the MAC page for formative assessment. So there's a direct link there. I linked the FAME site on the Michigan site. Margaret Heritage definition
and of formative assessment, and Jill Willis. People familiar with Margaret Heritage? Yeah. Great. Margaret Heritage is another one of those icons. Jill Willis is somebody we had in last year who is from Australia and talked about the commonalities and differences in how they use formative assessment. And I just put some Learning Point articles that are just around formative assessment. So I linked those on here to make it easy for you to go back and find those. Is there any questions before we move to the next? Okay, I hope this is better for you than I don't feel. It's the last session and we're all ready to go home. We're all on brain. I know I am. But, you know, without having everybody have read the book, I felt like this was the best way for you to hear from the author. So you have suggestions, I'm willing to in case this comes up again. But measuring affect. Measuring affect requires us to measure the student's non-cognitive disposition, such as their attitudes, interests, and values related to the learning and assessment task. When you talk to teachers about doing those types of surveys to find out and link what is important to students into the instructional tasks in which we do, it's one more thing to do. And will kids be honest in what we're looking for? But if we know their attitudes, I did a session yesterday about the growth mindset in mathematics, and really about getting behind what kids are thinking about, we can change those beliefs by helping them find success. So the same kinds of things here is if we know what their attitude is, we can address that with them and help change that. You know, if we know what their interests are, how do we incorporate some of that into what we're doing? And then helping students. Again, I was a special ed teacher. I always had the conversation with my students. It's not about what your score is. The important piece is, are you making progress forward? So let's look at those progress areas we've made progress in and let's celebrate those. Now let's create our next plan for what we're going to do to continue to move you forward. So sometimes we're afraid to have those conversations with students, but if we have those conversations with students, it also gets them to buy in. Because here's what I can do to help you, but what are you going to do to help yourself? So let's listen to this piece real quick on measuring AFAC. Oh. I just switched computers. I don't know if you're in my other session, but I went to a Mac after years of a PC, and just 6 months, I can't now remember where am I getting my toggle. You know, I can't just use my touchpad down here. But let's look at affective behaviors.
I think affect is more important than cognition. It may seem strange, but we teach kids so they will acquire skills and knowledge. That's important stuff. But the attitudes that we engender while we're teaching them can have the most profound effect on those children. If you create a kid who loves learning, likes to read, that kid is more likely to go on learning and reading as time transpires. And yet, despite the importance of kids' attitudes and values and interests, despite their overriding importance, we do almost nothing to measure them. Now, do we measure it for an individual youngster? No, we do not, because we don't know how to do that. But what we can do is use anonymous self-reports, just little inventories, 10-item inventories, 8-item inventories, without names on it. And what you do is you draw an inference about how the whole group is feeling regarding such things as bullying, the importance of effort in learning things. Now, this is very important stuff, and assessment literate educators will realize it and occasionally dip into the affective arena because there isn't anything more important.
And I'm not sure if it was Margaret Heritage who made the comment that the most important user of assessment data is the student themselves. That or Rick Stiggins, one of those two, that we need to help our students own that and to believe in themselves and to know that we're here to support them in that work.
So when we're looking at those types of inventories on page 107, it just talks about the three kinds again, your attitudes, your interests, and your values. And then in his book on page 116, he actually gives you a sample of an assessment inventory. So sometimes it's just nice to see a simple inventory to be able to help us.
So, we have come to the end of the actual book, and now we can, so what, now what? What are we gonna do now? So, oh, that's really nice. So,
how might you use any of this information gained today? So, for example, I'll give you one way. If you were looking at one of those areas with a group, you could find a portion of this to read, but you could also use another voice to send the same message that you're trying to send. So use one of those learning moments. Those mean that they're 1 to 2 minute videos to be able to use. And if you did that with your administrative team, over a year process, you would have the book read and you could have more conversation around your current assessment methods in which you're using, as well as the assessment measure. So whether it's NWEA, whether it's your DIBELS, whether it's FastBridge, whether it's whatever it is, you could use that. What are you guys doing in the field to try to help with this? Is there ideas that you can share with one another? This conference is about learning from one another. Any ideas? It's Friday. It's Thursday. I keep saying it's Friday. I was like, the trip is going to be horrible. It's Friday afternoon. No, it's not. It's Thursday.
All right. So one of the things I'm thinking about
is,
you know, and I don't know people in your district, but our teachers struggle with the concept or are struggling with student growth data as part of their evaluation.
Yes.
So we've actually used that a little bit as an on-ramp to get teachers to start considering assessment literacy from the back end, right? Like I hate to admit it, but it's not child-centered and child-focused. But sometimes for teachers who've been in the system, right, a long time, that motivation, right, is about, okay, we're gonna make it personal about me, so I wanna make sure that the assessments I'm using are valid and reliable, that they're comparable to the assessments that my peers are giving. You know, people aren't gaming the system. So that's actually been, we've been able to leverage that a little bit through our SLO process in terms of using that as a point to get staff to do some of this professional learning on their own outside. Because we could provide professional development, but it doesn't necessarily stick until they begin to apply it.
100%. If any time that we gather the information but don't use it, it makes it very difficult, okay? I am not a large scale, nor was I ever the testing coordinator. I was the assessment person, but on the front side, how to use things and to make sure that we were using it for the right purpose. So the validity, reliability, the fairness piece. But I didn't do the tickets for the state level testing. I didn't do all of that. We had somebody who did that. But we need to have the conversations that whatever we do, you have a choice in how you can help move these forward. You can do your SLOs, you know. Do they know, how am I gathering that data along the way to make that happen, you know? Part of it could be, have you done an inventory of your students? you know, if you can buy into their heart, they're more willing to work with you as well. So thanks for sharing that. Anybody else? If you have support, you need information, you can contact me. Here's my contact information. You can visit the MAC booth. You can join the MAC and continue to add to this work that we're trying to do across the state. You can join us for upcoming learning opportunities, and they're there. Again, the next MAC reads. And again, I linked the assessment learning points that we have made already to this, so they're easy for you to find. And one of our activities for today, let me see what time it is. Sorry. 3:38, we have about 20 minutes before it ends. We can look through these articles to say, is this something we would like to jigsaw? We did this in another activity. These are not necessarily the same articles. But is it helpful to read one of these articles? Because I know some have to leave early. Is it helpful to read one of these articles and share amongst the group so you have a better idea and don't have to read the full article right now? To think about on your drive home, how might I use these materials with those in my district? So if we jigsaw, it takes about a 10-minute process, 5 minutes to read, and 5 minutes to kind of share out. You're more than welcome to that. You're not going to hurt my feelings if that's not what you want to do. Again, we're not here for me, we're here for you. And so I will be here if people want to stay and read. I'm happy to facilitate that. And if not, I know, again, some have to leave early. And so feel free to do that if you need to as well. So if we're going to read, if you would like to look through the packet and see if there's one that is of higher interest to you. The second one in is definitely regarding the book that was written directly after the book study with Dr. Popham. And so we have that one in there. We have just the fundamental understandings, but if you need something like reliability and validity, we have pieces in there to look at that. And these sometimes are a nice little way to get people involved, not just listening. But since it was about the book, I felt like I needed to give you at least that information. And since nobody had read that, but what's in a name? Is there an article you would like to select and then do a jigsaw? Or do you want to just read these on your own? What do you think? What do you guys think?
I think I'm looking for something more.
Okay, that's fine.
If there's any reason to go to number two.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at it.
Right. That's why I pointed that out.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah. I have this book back in my office. I haven't read it yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. So anything that we can do to help, we're here. I appreciate your time today. And so thank you. I'm around if you want to ask questions. If not, have a safe travels home. And if I don't see you before, I'll see you at next year's MSTC.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Anything for you?